This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mamie Rosenberg.
1948 was a watershed presidential election year. To place our present situation in historical perspective, later on we'll present a Labor Radio speech by then president of the Screen Actors Guild, Ronald Reagan, when he was a liberal supporting Harry Truman.
But first, after a resounding yes vote to unionize with the Culinary Workers Union, Local 226, Trump's Hotel Las Vegas refused to recognize and bargain with the union as required by federal law. Now, boss Trump has filed objections to the outcome of a free and fair union representation election won by the workers who want a union. And recently, the National Labor Relations Board issued another federal complaint against Trump, alleging that his company unlawfully told one employee, "You're fired,"
and discriminated against another based on their union support. Federal officials maintain Trump's hotel company engaged in numerous unlawful practices, such as issuing rules prohibiting workers from communicating with one another and the public, engaging in surveillance and interrogations and intimidating employees, and suspending and threatening to fire union supporters. "If Donald Trump wants to make America great again," said Maria Jaramillo, a housekeeper at the Trump Las Vegas, "he should start by negotiating a fair deal with us."
Trump's Las Vegas hotel workers say he's anti-worker. He'd rather say you're fired than allow workers to unionize. And we speak now with Bethany Kahn, Director of Communications of Culinary Workers Union Local 226, and a worker at the hotel, Luis Carlos. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Bethany Kahn, why don't you begin by telling us what's been happening at the Trump Las Vegas Hotel?
About a year ago, the workers of the hotel decided to organize. Since then, the hotel has run an anti-union campaign against their own employees. There's been a lot happening in terms of unfair labor practices and charges that the union filed. But the thing that's new is that the workers voted in by a majority, won an election to be represented by the culinary union. And the hotel filed objections to that vote. Recently, the National Labor Relations Board recommended to be overruled entirely. So it's a huge victory for workers and for the union. And so now we call upon Mr. Trump, who's a 50% owner of that hotel, to negotiate a contract with his employees immediately.
Bethany, if you could go a little bit more in detail about the unfair labor practices that Trump has engaged in, what were the complaints?
Well, an example is when the first day when the campaign went public, five workers went to work at the Trump Hotel Las Vegas wearing union buttons. They were unfairly suspended. The union filed charges with the National Labor Relations Board on behalf of the workers that the management was asking them about their union activity and telling them their union buttons were not part of their uniform. So that's an example of illegal activity. And so we filed those charges with the National Labor Relations Board. The next day, the workers were brought back to work with full back pay, like a whole day that was lost. So that's a victory for the workers and for the union, and we continue the fight every day to make sure there's a contract.
Let's take the story a step back. Tell us who the workers are and, indeed, what brought them together towards the end of wanting to unionize.
The Culinary Union has been fighting for workers and their families for 80 years. So the Trump Hotel Las Vegas is a five-star boutique hotel just off the Strip, surrounded by hotels and casinos that are union. There's quite a bit of a standard in Las Vegas in terms of working people having fair wages, job security, good health benefits. And on the Strip, workers are paid approximately $21 an hour, including benefits. So at the Trump Hotel Las Vegas, the workers are paid approximately $3.33 less per hour across all classifications, including they have to pay huge sums of money for health insurance, and they don't have a pension, so they can't retire with dignity. So these are workers who do housekeeping, bartenders, cocktails, food servers.
I think we have Luis on the line. Luis?
Yes?
Why don't you just dovetail with what Bethany was saying, and can you talk about your experiences at the hotel as a worker?
Wonderful. Well, my name is Luis Carlos. I'm working as a Tron as a banquet server. I'm working for around 3 years. My different is about we get fight for almost a year and a half to get the contract. Finally, we get the election. And so now what we want is Mr. Trump sit down with us and sign the contract. We get less money and health care. We don't have any benefits. That was one of the main points to fight for this election and try to get the contract as soon as possible, because comparison with the rest of the hotel in the city, we are made $4 less than everybody. We don't have patients. Our health care is not the same like everybody, and that's what we're fighting for.
When you did start to unionize, when you did start to organize, what did you experience from management?
Well, it was very difficult because they don't want any union. They don't want us to be work together as a team, as a unionizing. Obviously, they promise better things for a lot of employers, and we don't want it. What we want is our union to represent us, to fight for us. For them, it was so difficult to understand why employees want to be a unionizer.
Louis, have you worked at unionized hotels? Is it better there?
Absolutely. I worked for 3 different hotels, and I see the difference. The difference is unbelievable. We make $4 less than everybody here in the city. We don't have pensions. Our health care is not nothing comparison to what we get from the union.
And what about your job itself? What do you do there, and how is it the same or different than at other hotels?
I make $4 less than everybody in the city. Well, we do the same job. And when any guests come to Tron International, we take care of them. We are making sure they have the best experience. In the same time, that's why we ask him, Mr. Trump, get for us what we want, because we give you 100%.
Louise, Trump is patting himself on the back, going out to blue-collar workers and saying that he's a great friend of the working class. Obviously, you don't think so. Why not?
He don't treat us like everybody in the city. We make less money. We don't have pension. We don't have health care benefits. This is not only for us. This is for our generation, to make America great. They do favors to the people close to them. Was not equal treat to everybody. Some people got better, some people don't. And that's what they chose. There was not a union. There was not an equal opportunity for everybody. They prefer some people, and they give you better chips. They give you more hours, which for union and for us was not fair.
And Bethany, I wanted to ask you more particularly about the worker who was fired. I know there's a complaint with the NLRB around that. What exactly happened there?
I mean, there are several complaints of unfair labor practices. And so the 5 workers who were suspended unfairly, that's just an example. There are other charges that we have alleged, which include incidents of physical assault, verbal abuse, intimidation, and threats by management, including when the vote was taking place on the December of last year, that the union alleges in one of the complaints that management and, you know, other staff were trying to intimidate or coerce workers into voting no against the union.
And Bethany, the NLRB, of course, being the National Labor Relations Board, when you said that there were physical assaults and so on, can you flesh that out for us more?
There's a specific example that I'm not going to comment on further other than to say it was an example between security pushing a worker in a parking lot. And so the NLRB recently has issued a complaint calling for a hearing of charges, just like the one I explained to you, on April 12th. And so on April 12th, we'll have a hearing of all these charges that were brought, and we'll go from there. And we're confident that the National Labor Relations Board will rule in favor of the workers and the union, as it's done so in the past.
And Bethany, Trump has contracted with a number of anti-union firms, union-busting firms, the Labor Relations Institute and Cruz and Associates. What can you tell us about those firms?
And I assume you don't mean Mr. Cruz.
Yeah, not
Cruz, no. Different law.
Yes,
could be.
And well, so there's a standard in Las Vegas that every employer has remained neutral on the Strip. MGM Resorts International, Caesars Entertainment, Mr. Wynn, Phil Ruffin, all the owners of the major properties on the Strip in downtown have remained neutral.
What does that mean?
When their workers, right, so they don't try to intimidate, harass, bully, or litigate, and let their employees choose whether to unionize or not. You know, it's just respecting the wishes of their workforce, and like workers are, they know what they want and they've decided that they want a union representation, just staying neutral and not running an anti-union activity or campaign. And so that's what the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas has done, is hired Lupe Cruz Associates. They ran a several months long anti-union campaign. And, you know, it's shameful that the hotel won't remain neutral and respect the wishes of their workers.
Bethany, how many workers are we speaking about? How many
people? It's a little over 500. Families that unionizing at the Trump Hotel represents. And now those workers, by majority, 53%, voted to be represented by the Culinary and Bartenders Union. And so now the next step is to negotiate a contract with Mr. Trump. The one thing I think is important to note is that Mr. Trump owns a hotel in Toronto, Trump Toronto. Those workers voted for an election, and they won a union. And a month later, Mr. Trump's company made a deal with them. So we are wondering why it's okay to have an agreement and a deal in Toronto, Canada, but not here in the United States of America. Both workers and both properties voted and won a contract. The Toronto workers got a contract. The workers here haven't.
Well, I'd like to ask you your thoughts on that. What is the politics of that?
I don't know. Mr. Trump says that he's a great negotiator, and that he wouldn't be afraid to negotiate with anyone. And so we would like him to sit down and negotiate a contract with his employees.
Do you think the Canadian labor laws are tougher than ours? Is that part of it?
You know, I don't know about that, but I do know is that we are very confident that in every step the company, as they keep appealing and objecting, that the National Labor Relations Board will continue to rule in favor of the workers who won a fair and free election. And so it's just a matter of time before the company will be required legally to bargain with the union.
Where does it stand exactly right now? What's the next step? Because the overwhelming vote has been pro-union, not an easy thing to get. Hooray, success. And so what happens now?
So we call on Mr. Trump to sit down with the hotel employees, his employees, to begin negotiations. The hotel objected the hearing officer's recommendations, and so they're appealing that, and we're waiting on the National Labor Relations Board to come down with another ruling, but we think siding with us again. We'll just ask once again to start negotiating contracts.
And, Lewis, I wanted to ask you, what kind of a boss, if you were telling other workers throughout the country, what kind of a boss is Mr. Trump?
Well, the problem is we don't see Mr. Trump in Vegas, so management is the one do everything over here. And we already won the election, but they don't own it yet, the election. And that's where our employees and my co-workers have bothered us, because we already won. What they're waiting for? We need to sit down with him as soon as possible, because, like I say, we're losing money, we're losing benefits, we don't have a pension. Every single day is a struggle for us, not only for us, but our family. In this battle, this was to get better education, not only for us, for our family, for previous generations. And Mr. Trump forgot about this great country. They are made for immigrants. Don't forget about it. They are made for immigrants.
And what happens to the worker who was fired? What happens to the worker who was, or workers that were assaulted? Are all of these things included under the National Labor Relations Board complaints? And what kind of relief do they get?
And so even though there isn't a contract implemented at that property, the union is still able, with the help of the NLRB, to protect workers. So we've gotten workers back to work. We've gotten them their back pay that they were owed. And so there's a way for us to fight for the workers and to make sure that workers get what they deserve and have justice. But, you know, that's an example of a union contract. If there was a contract in place, there'd be a grievance process and procedure. There would be rules that would be, you know, talked about beforehand. So we do what we can, but we're very successful. We continue to win these cases.
Just remind us of how important it is for workers like Luis, for any workers to be able to unionize and to have a collective bargaining agreement. How important is that? Because certainly that's a feature that was left out of Mr. Trump's rallies when he talks about making America great. I thought it was the working class that made America great.
Yes, and here in Las Vegas, we believe so. You know, we're proud that for 80 years, the Culinary Union has represented over 735,000 workers. These are workers who have good jobs with job security, good health benefits, and fair wages. And they, Culinary Union members comprise the majority of the middle class in Nevada. So around the country, as the middle class is shrinking, here in Nevada, we've been able to protect and preserve. And workers have good jobs. They can afford to send their kids to college, buy their homes, and keep those homes during a recession. These are all really important things that workers can have a strong middle-class opportunity here in Las Vegas. And that's really what workers want. They want the opportunity to provide for their families. And a union contract means that.
Yes, Mr. Trump really doesn't know how to make a deal or doesn't want to.
Oh, my gosh, the art of the deal, huh?
Yep.
Well, I guess he doesn't, but I know that our friends from the Culinary Workers Union are on the case. We hope to get that ruling. When do you think we might get the NLRB ruling?
We don't know when the ruling on the unionization is going to come down, but we expect hearing from the National Labor Relations Board to take place on April 12th. Regarding some of the unfair labor practice charges that the union brought to the NLRB.
And Luis, Carlos, are you going to continue to organize for your family, for yourself, for your coworkers?
Absolutely. This rallies and this battle is not only for this contract and all like that. This is for future generations. This is the battle that our kids have to see and learn that you have to be fight for your rights. And this is important for that, not only for this moment, but for the future generation to understand not where the people say we cannot do it, we can do it. And that's where the union is strong. And we are totally happy with our union because they 100% and they fight for us. And in the difficult moment and the happy moment, they are with us every single time. And I want to tell you, thank you for the time, and I want to thank you to give you the opportunity. And hopefully our generation and our families, we got better and better because this country will be great no matter what.
Luis Carlos, si se puede, for sure. I know this is going to happen with people like yourselves, and you're absolutely right. It's for this generation of workers and their children. And thank you for all of your commitment to provide support, wages, benefits, grievance procedures, and all else that we get when we collectivize our energies, when we unionize. So, again, Luis Carlos, banquet food server at Trump Hotel Las Vegas, and Bethany Kahn with the Culinary Workers. For all that you do, si se puede.
Thank you. Union.
Gracias por todo.
Thank you. De nada.
Cold eyes upon me, they stare. People all around me, and they're all in fear. They don't seem to want me, but they won't admit I must be some kind of creature up here having fit. From my party house, I'm afraid to come outside. Although I'm filled with love, I'm afraid they'll hurt my pride. So I play the part I feel they want of me. And I pull the shade so I don't see them seeing me. I've been hard times in this crazy town. I've been hard times. There's no love to be found. Having hard times in this crazy town. Having hard times. There's no love to be found. Yeah. In my party house, I feel like needing others. Familiar faces creep, raise a bravo. But to my surprise, I find a man corrupt. Although he be my brother, he wants to hold me up. Having a hard time.
Oh, Mr. Dewey.
Yes?
Dear Mr. Huey.
Huey, not so
Huey. Do you think the 80th Congress did their best? There's inflation here today.
That's true.
There's no housing on the way.
No, there isn't.
Is there any remedy that you suggest?
Oh, Mr. Voter, nice Mr. Voter, as my buddy Taft appropriately said, when the price is in excess, people really should eat less.
Then they won't need any houses.
No, they'll all be dead instead.
You know, Ken, I'm reminded of the election of 1948.
Mimi, wasn't that the year that Thomas Dewey was the Republican candidate and Harry Truman the Democratic Party candidate?
And Henry Wallace ran as the Progressive Party candidate, and Strom Thurmond ran as the candidate for the States' Rights Party. The Republican Dewey was soaring in the polls, and the Democrats were attacking the Republican Congress. And then, to everyone's surprise, Truman won.
Mimi, the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union had a radio show in 1948. On the show, it boasted of the virtues of Harry Truman and attacked the Republican candidate Thomas Dewey. And guess who the program starred? The great communicator himself, a man who in later years changed sides to himself become president, but in 1948 was a liberal Democrat and president of the Screen Actors Guild.
Ronald Reagan?
Yeah, would you like to hear part of that ILGWU broadcast?
Absolutely.
This is the story of what the Republican 80th Congress and the National Association of Manufacturers have done to bring on inflation and set back the cause of liberal government in the United States. Presented by the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, now to Ronald Reagan in Hollywood.
This is Ronald Reagan. You know me as a motion picture actor. But tonight I'm just a citizen, concerned about the national election next month, and more than a little impatient with those promises the Republicans made before they got control of Congress a couple of years ago. I remember listening to the radio on election night in 1946. Joseph Martin, the Republican Speaker of the House, said very solemnly, "We Republicans intend to work for a real increase in income for everybody by encouraging more production and lower prices without impairing wages or working conditions." But what actually happened? The profits of corporations have doubled, while workers' wages have increased by only one quarter. Profits have gone up four times as much as wages. And the small increase workers did receive was more than eaten up by rising prices. For example, here's an Associated Press dispatch I read the other day about Smith L. Carpenter, a craftsman in Union Springs, New York. Mr. Carpenter retired some years ago, thinking he had enough money saved up so that he could live out his last years without having to worry. But he didn't figure on this Republican inflation, which ate up all his savings. And so he's gone back to work. The reason this is news is Mr. Carpenter is 91 years old. Now, take as a contrast the Standard Oil Company of New Jersey, which reported a net profit of $210 million after taxes for the first half of 1948, an increase of 70% in 1 year. In other words, high prices have not been caused by higher wages, but by bigger and bigger profits. The Republican promises sounded pretty good in 1946, but what has happened since then, since the 80th Congress took over? Prices have climbed to the highest level in history, although the death of the OPA was supposed to bring prices down through the natural process of free competition. Labor has been handcuffed by the vicious Taft-Hartley law. Social Security benefits have been snatched away from almost a million workers by the Gearhart bill. Fair employment practices, which had worked so well during wartime, have been abandoned. Veterans' pleas for low-cost homes have been ignored, and many people are still living in made-over chicken coops and garages. Tax reduction bills have been passed to benefit the higher income brackets alone. The average worker saved only $1.73 a week. In the false name of economy, millions of children have been deprived of milk once provided through the federal school lunch program. This was the payoff of the Republicans' promises, and this is why we must have new faces in the Congress of the United States. Democratic faces. This is why we must elect President Truman for adequate low-cost housing, for civil rights, for prices people can afford to pay, and for a labor movement freed of the Taft-Hartley law.
Now let's hear historian Eric Fauna put the past in perspective.
What did you think of the speech, and what do you think, why are you going to vote for that man you just heard?
I would certainly support him for any office in the land. This was 1948. He's talking about issues of social class that are no longer part of our political dialogue today. The notion that the conditions of workers are actually worth considering by politicians. In the 48 election, there were four parties, the Democrats and Republicans, of course, Dewey for the Republicans and Truman running for re-election as a Democrat. You had Henry Wallace on the left as the Progressive Party candidate, who was pushing even more strongly on these economic issues as well as civil rights and opposing the Cold War. And on the right, you had Strom Thurmond from South Carolina and the States' Rights Party, which was formed after the civil rights issue was raised strongly at the Democratic National Convention, and the Democratic Party in 48, for the first time since Reconstruction, made civil rights of blacks a major political issue, prompting a walkout of several southern states and the formation of the States' Rights Party. So Truman and Dewey, each of them was flanked by what appeared at the time to be pretty strong alternative parties. The 48 election was the first post-war election. It also, as Reagan's speech indicates, came after the Republicans had won control of Congress in 1946 and had gone on to pass the Taft-Hartley Act and many other very conservative measures. Many observers thought that the congressional election of 46 was a harbinger of Republican victory in 48. Truman led a very vigorous campaign against the Congress and against the Republicans and really reinvigorated the New Deal coalition by playing on workers' fears that the country might slip back into a depression, that the Republicans were simply draining off income from the working class in order to benefit profits and the well-to-do. Truman succeeded in tying Dewey to the very right-wing Republican Congress and in reinvigorating this New Deal coalition. He also, for the first time, made civil rights a big issue in the campaign, recognizing the growing significance of the black vote in the North. Blacks could not vote in the South at this time, but because of World War II, there had been a significant migration of blacks into the northern and western states where they could vote, and the black vote was becoming very crucial. So Truman ran a very, very intelligent and vigorous campaign. Dewey ran as if he was absolutely assured of election. The Wallace campaign was, of course, a tremendous disappointment to those further on the left who had really hoped that this was the opportunity for a permanent third party to be created. Wallace pushed much more strongly than Truman on civil rights. Indeed, he campaigned in the South for black rights, which took a certain amount of courage at this time, and pulled Truman toward that position in order to maintain his hold on the black vote. But the big issue between Truman and Wallace was foreign policy, and Wallace was strongly opposed to the Cold War, the Truman Doctrine of containment of communism all over the world, and the endless involvement of the United States in suppressing revolutionary movements all over the world. As the election drew near, much of Wallace's support evaporated as many of the more left-wing voters began to fear Dewey's election and felt that a vote for Wallace would be wasted. So it was a very historic election. It maintained the grip of New Deal policies on the presidency. It also secured the dominance in the Democratic Party of what you might call the Cold War liberals, those who were liberal on domestic policy but very powerfully anti-communist and pro-Cold War in international affairs. Soon after the election, the flurry for civil rights was dropped by these liberals. So in terms of race, the 48 election was a harbinger of things to come, but the 50s were not a time when either party really did much on the race issue until the mass movement of blacks really began.
Oh, Mr. Dewey.
You've been listening to selections from a 1948 election year radio program featuring Arnold Stang and Ronald Reagan. Commentary was provided by Professor Eric Fona.
This has been a Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report special report, filed by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
I represent the working men.
Do you promise, Mr. Dewey?
Promise? Oh, I'll promise anything. I want to be the president.